It's 2:06 on Wednesday afternoon. We're coming to you live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting with a lot of news to discuss at the Republican convention as that unfolds in Cleveland, the Democratic convention coming up next week. We'll talk a bit about that. I'm very happy to have with us today the former mayor of the city of Atlanta, Shirley Franklin. And we should say, Mayor, that when I invited you, you made it clear you don't represent the Democratic Party, you don't represent Hillary Clinton, but you still probably will have a lot to say, I would guess.
I have a lot of opinions, but thank you for the invitation.
Chip Lake, Republican political strategist, joins us at the table. Aaron Gould-Chinen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thank you for coming back, Aaron. We're really glad to have you here. Kevin Riley will be on the phone later, the editor of the AJC, to give us a report from Cleveland. And also on the phone with us at some point today, Ashley Bell. He is a delegate to the Republican convention in Cleveland and, well, I think it's fair to say one of the small number of African-American delegates who are in Cleveland this week will get his take on how things have unfolded. But we do have breaking news, Aaron. Within about the last hour or so, Meredith MacIver, who describes herself as a writer for the Clinton Organization.
Trump.
For the Trump Organization. Yeah. Wouldn't that contribute
that would be a
to the conspiracy? For the Trump Organization, has issued a statement in which she accepted responsibility for the plagiarized lines from the Melania Trump speech on Monday night. She says that Melania Trump has always liked Mrs. Obama and a number of other political figures, she says, and that they discussed lines from other political speeches. And MacIver says she wrote down the lines from the Obama speech, and they just ended up in the Trump speech. She didn't check to make sure she wasn't plagiarizing. She says, I feel terrible for the chaos I have caused Melania and the Trumps as well as Mrs. Obama. No harm was meant. She says, by the way, that she offered her resignation and that Donald Trump said, people make mistakes. How do you... It looks like the Trump people are doing a pretty decent job of trying to turn this into a plus. The lovely Mr. Trump says, don't worry, we'll keep you on. We all make mistakes, except him.
Yeah, he's perfect, right? Now, I think it was an interesting story, and it was interesting that it came out when it did after 2 days of the Trump's campaign officials basically denying even that there was plagiarism or there was a problem at all and that it was the media's fault. Some even tried to place some blame on Hillary Clinton for this. But an important point here is that the Mrs. MacIver works for Trump's private organization, private business. She was not on the campaign. And so, you know, a lot of people are saying that she fell on her sword. We don't have any reason to believe that this isn't actually what happened. But it's interesting that it's finally coming out after 2 days.
Well, you know, Mayor, one of the things that I find interesting about this is that, first of all, the Trump people let this drag on. Since late Monday night, it's now Wednesday afternoon, it basically wiped out all the other messaging out of Cleveland. And one of the most interesting things is that the Trump people kept changing their story about what really happened. Let's just listen until MacIver finally came forward to the last thing that Paul Manafort, the campaign chairman for Trump, was saying.
This is once again an example of when a woman threatens Hillary Clinton, seeks out to demean her and take her down. It's not going to work.
Mayor, what do you think about hearing that from Paul Manafort?
Well, I mean, obviously, when you start changing your story, you're looking for something to stick. And once you've been at this for a long enough time, you realize the truth is what really sticks. And the Miss MacIver probably is telling more or less what happened. I don't know her. The comparison between the two speeches was just too close.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes it's just easier on everybody if you say, I made a mistake.
Yeah, Chip, don't you think that the Trump people did this themselves a disservice? First of all, by not just coming forward and saying, oh my gosh, you're right. We are seeing comparisons that trouble us. We've got to look into this. Instead, it was another case of their feeling if they just keep denying, it'll all go away.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it was brought to their attention the first time, and I saw that clip live. I think it was on CNN that Paul Manafort was answering a question that Chris Cuomo had asked him. And I woke up that morning not knowing that there was a situation with the possibility of some of her speech being plagiarized and things like that. So I think it was a knee-jerk reaction from a campaign that my guess is if Paul Manafort had to do it all over again and was able to see exactly what was going to happen the next 48 hours, of course he would. I thought, just like Aaron, I was just as struck by the fact that not only did the statement come from somebody with the Trump Organization, but it's on Trump Organization letterhead.
Yeah.
And then also one final thing as well that I think is very interesting from her statement is she said over the phone, she read me, she meaning Melania Trump, read me some passages from Mrs. Obama's speech. So, you know, I thought that was very interesting. Meredith was writing down what Melania Trump was telling her stood out to her when she read the First Lady's speeches.
And I think really this is it's really a shame that the Trump Organization, the Trump campaign handled it this way, because it was a really great speech. You know,
it was a fantastic speech.
And we haven't heard very much from her in this entire campaign. You know, and the fact that they bungled the problem instead of just saying, yeah, you're right, it looks like we made a mistake, we apologize for that, but wasn't that a great speech? And it just would have stayed. Now, nobody remembers anything that she said other than she or her speechwriter cribbed a couple passages
from the
show.
I think that's really important. I throw this out to any of you who wants to weigh in. There are people who probably have a fair argument to make, people outside of our circle of politics and journalism, who say, oh my gosh, why are you spending so much time on this? It really doesn't matter. But the fact of the matter is, it does matter, doesn't it, Mayor? Because Melania Trump was in a position to humanize her husband in front of the entire 23 million people were watching Monday night. She had the chance to tell stories about what a remarkable man she's seen him to be. The children had that opportunity last night. Many people were watching Donald Trump Jr.'s remarks, thinking, "I wonder if he's going to steal some." So, even though it seems like picking on something that might not matter, this does have a meaning, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, my typical response. I've been teaching at the University of Texas in Austin. I mean, what I have said to students and others is pretty simple: that the truth in today's world, where you have social media, you have the internet, and you have all these sources, when you find yourself in a pickle or kind of in a situation that you didn't expect, the best thing is to back up and really admit as much as you can what you did and what you didn't do and move on.
Well, it's important hearing that coming from you, who is certainly, as mayor, in positions where you were on the spot over statements you've made or actions you'd taken that some people thought were mistakes and that at times might have been mistakes.
No, there's no question about it. And actually, I've found the electorate, people who vote, and the people who lived in Atlanta very forgiving and understanding once you explain the circumstances. Having said that, however, I mean, it is a lot to expect that someone who has never addressed 23 million people to be perfect. And the one thing I say is, if we're looking for perfection in politics or political leaders, we're really wasting our time. What we are looking for is integrity, honesty. I'm looking for intelligence. I'd like some vision too. But integrity and honesty are at the top of my list. And part of integrity and honesty is admitting, easily admitting, when you have a wrong step one way or the other, whoever you are.
I think one of the most surprising things, Chip Lake, about this statement was to be told that Melania Trump really admires Michelle Obama, given the way in which her husband, Donald, has been demonizing certainly President Obama, and I suppose by default, his wife as well.
Well, and she put that in the letter, and as I'd mentioned earlier, I mean, you know, Meredith McIver got this information from Melania Trump, and to what the mayor said in response to your question, Bill, I mean, The problem that I think exists with how this was handled is this is not an isolated incident that the Trump campaign had to deal with. There are other organizations and other campaigns that have found themselves in a similar position that might have handled it very similar way than they did. But the concern that a lot of us as Republicans have is it is part and parcel to how this campaign has been run. There's no organization whatsoever, as Dan Senor said on CNN last night, it's a bunch of advanced guys in a Twitter feed. And I'm afraid, you know, I hate to agree with that. It's funny, but it's true. And none of these speeches were vetted. You know, 4 years ago, every semicolon and parentheses and comma, everything was vetted because that's what normally happens at conventions. And I would suspect next week's convention probably revetting some of those speeches that the Democrats don't make that mistake.
Chip, I'm awfully glad you attributed that quote was really good, and if you'd used it as your own, we would have accused you of plagiarism.
Very careful about that, especially today.
All right, I'd like to move on and talk just a bit about the convention last night. The mayor's already said my cable went out.
Well, there was a bad storm. I didn't see any of it.
It was a big thunderstorm.
I was not suggesting you were being less than truthful.
I saw some of it.
All right, you saw a little. But here's what I want to do. And I want to bring in Ashley Bell, as I mentioned, a Republican delegate to the convention from Georgia, is on the phone right now. Ashley, I want to include you in the conversation that we're about to have, and I appreciate your being with us.
No, thank you all for having me. It's a great panel you got there.
Oh, I agree. So here's what I want to talk about. As I watched this unfold last night, Trump goes over the top. Donald Trump Jr. Gets to read the New York totals that put him over the top. And yet what I felt throughout the night, last night and even the night before, was where was the excitement? Where was the enthusiasm? Now, I'm watching on TV, and that's different than being in the hall, but it really did feel to me, Ashley, as though this is a convention that hasn't quite decided. There are lots of empty seats. We saw more empty seats in the hall last night than I think I've ever seen at a convention in my 30 years of covering them. Is there an enthusiasm gap of some sort? Are you all still trying to wrap your arms around Trump, the nominee?
It depends on who you're talking to. There's levels and layers to it. You know, behind me, sitting with the Georgia delegation, was, you know, Bruce Lavelle, who's the outspoken Trump advocate. Literally, he was dancing on chairs and literally almost had a heart attack. He was so excited about Trump going over the top. And then there were other people who were sitting on their hands, and there were other people who were just glad to see the primary come to an end. So, it depends on who you're talking to. I think there's a spectrum, but I think overall, there was an exhale that, okay, this is finally over. The primary is finally over. So let's just take the hand we got and play the best we can.
But that's an interesting statement in and of itself. Yeah. Let's take and play the hand that we've got. Doesn't that express just what I'm talking about? Isn't this kind of still a hostile takeover of the Republican Party by Donald Trump?
You're talking about the number two person, Ted Cruz, still hasn't endorsed Donald Trump. He's going to show up today. We hope he endorses Donald Trump today. That's what we're anticipating. May or may not happen. So when you have so many candidates that were involved in such a brutal primary, it's just part of it. We wish we were further along at this point, but we're not. So do we have further to go? Yes, hopefully tonight's speech and Donald Trump's speech on Thursday night can get us closer, because we honestly believe that if the Republicans get behind Donald Trump, he's brought in some people who are non-traditional Republicans. So if the base can just get behind him, we actually believe that we can win those three or four swing states in a close one and win the White House.
Chip, you want to jump in here?
I would agree with what Ashley said with respect to it's still a work in progress, and I don't know, Ashley, if you use those exact words, but I mean it's an arranged marriage in many respects, and so we're trying to navigate through that. I will say this: I was very impressed last night with Don Jr.'s speech. It exceeded my expectations, as well as his daughter's speech. Don Jr. was able to execute a speech a way that his father cannot, and really humanized him. And I will say this, Bill. I believe on Thursday night, when Donald Trump gets up in Cleveland to address the delegates in front of primetime TV, you will never see a more important acceptance speech in the history of American politics, because I don't think he's capable of giving a presidential acceptance speech, because one of two things has to happen. He either has to stay on message and read his teleprompter, which is not natural for him, and he's going to look very uncomfortable, or he's going to speak off the cuff, at which point he's going to start selling steaks and wine. And so neither one of those two things are very attractive to Republicans, but I really think I'm looking more forward to watching this speech than any acceptance speech that I've ever seen.
Ashley, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's what Donald Trump wants. I think he's been teasing it. I think there's such high expectations. But there are a lot of things that we just expect of Donald Trump that's just going to happen. He's not going to give a traditional acceptance speech. It's just not going to happen. What we expect from him is a speech that's going to be a lot of attacks on Hillary Clinton, because that is the one thing that unites our party. There's nothing he can say that can really mend the fences and get everyone on the same page better than attacking Hillary Clinton and telling everyone that at the end of the day, all 17 or however many people ran for office, they all ran to beat Hillary Clinton. That's what we all have in common.
Sorry, Ashley. Shirley Franklin, I do want to say that the notion of people being less than enthusiastic about their nominee at a convention is certainly not unique to Republicans. I will take you back to 1984 in San Francisco when the Democrats nominated Walter Mondale for president. I happen to be standing right next to Governor Joe Frank Harris when Walter Mondale made his acceptance speech. And the very first thing that, as you'll recall, Walter Mondale said was, Ronald Reagan is going to raise your taxes. He won't tell you he's going to do it. I'm telling you right now, I will. And I looked at Governor Harris, and I saw his face melt and all of his enthusiasm for Mondale completely vanish.
Well, and Mondale didn't win.
Right.
So, you have to take that into consideration. I mean, enthusiasm, I think we are expecting, first of all, we know more about what's going on at the convention than we have any other convention. We've got more sources of information. We get it all day long. So to think that it's going to crescendo at any particular time during the day might be unrealistic. But on the other hand, I am not the student of politics that others on this call, either Ashley or...
We're all shaking our heads.
Well, I'm not the student. I mean, I really am not the student of politics that others might be. But I really believe that the everyday voter, the majority of voters, want candidates at every level of office who are for something, not against something.
Well, I think that's a great way to set up the next part of our conversation. And Ashley, you already mentioned it, and if you have time and want to, we're going to take a quick break, but we'd love to have you stay with us.
Sure.
When we come back from the break, let's talk about what Ashley mentioned, what Shirley Franklin just set up for us, which is two nights in a row, the convention has been about Hillary Clinton, not Donald Trump. And let's talk about what that means for this election cycle. This is Political Rewind. It's 2:23. We'll be back after a very short break.
This week, Republicans convene in Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there, too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill for speeches, interviews, and analysis live from the Republican National Convention. Special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
Tune in tonight starting at 8 here on GPB.
Vice President, take it or leave it.
I wouldn't be your Veep if there were a grassy knoll full of Jodie Foster fans in the front row at your inauguration.
On the next Fresh Air, as the political drama unfolds at the Republican convention, we talk about fictional presidential politics with the showrunner of HBO's Veep. David Mandel has just been nominated for several Emmys. Join us.
You can hear that interview on Fresh Air this afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. With us today, the former mayor of the city of Atlanta, Shirley Franklin. We're so glad to have you here, Mayor. Aaron Gould-Chinen, political reporter for the AJC, who's headed to Philadelphia next week to watch the Democratic convention. I think, Mayor Franklin, you are perhaps going up as one of the chairs of the platform committee. Have you made that decision yet?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay, good. Wasn't sure. And Chip Lake, is here. He's a Republican political strategist. And on the phone from Cleveland, Ashley Bell. Ashley, I introduced you, I'm not sure if you were on the phone then, as one of really a handful of African-American delegates at the Republican convention. Do you think I characterized that correctly? Are you feeling a little lonely up there, Ashley?
Well, you know, I have an interesting background because, you know, in my former life, I was, you know, Democrat, and I've attended Democratic conventions. On my resume is also volunteer for Shirley Franklin for mayor. So, you know, I got to, I'm all over the place. But I tell you that there's a handful of us, but that's only because the Democrats and Republicans pick their delegates totally differently. Democrats have requirements on how many African-Americans, how many women can run. That's built into the books. That's caked into the process.
All right. That's your story, and you're sticking with it, right?
There's a couple of us up here. There's about 80.
Okay. Thank you. So, by the way, we're at PoliticsGPB. If you want to tweet us, I do such a lousy job reminding people that we'd love to hear from you on Twitter, at PoliticsGPB. Okay? So let's talk about something that you mentioned, Mayor Franklin. And that is people want to be, you believe voters want to be for something. Now, it seems to me that most national conventions have a story that they build, a story arc over 4 days. And, you know, we're used to seeing that story unfold night by night. There's nothing wrong with a first night like the Republicans had where it's red meat for the base, the core, and they certainly gave that in angry speeches about Hillary Clinton. But at a certain point, you expect to see that story turn and be about your presumptive nominee, and you expect to start hearing heartwarming, emotional, intellectual arguments about that candidate. We remember 1992, Bill Clinton in New York, a boy from Hope, right? That's not happening at this convention, at least not yet.
Well not yet.
There are two more days. I mean, and I wouldn't prejudge. I mean, first of all, I don't prejudge the success of the convention based on day one or day two or mistakes that we might have talked.
That's very fair.
I mean, being fair is part of it, too. I mean, my ability to persuade someone to pay attention to my point of view is whether they think I'm fair or not. Mm-hmm. So I want to be fair. The second thing is that I think I didn't say all voters. I said the majority of voters.
Okay.
Are looking, there are always will be people who vote against something, who are against something and will vote for a candidate because they join them. But the majority of people that I've ever worked with from either political party when I was mayor or certainly within the Democratic Party are looking for a forward vision, not for a backward analysis. And I think that could be a deciding factor in the November election.
And Bill,
go ahead.
I want to add to what Mayor Franklin is saying. You know, this is a process. It was set up for the first 2 days to unify the party. There's nothing that unifies the party more than Hillary Clinton. But now it is time to turn and focus on Donald Trump. You saw that with Donald Trump Jr. last night. But just to remind folks, there is nothing Republicans want more than to win. We've been out of the White House for 8 years, so people want to win, and that want to win is what's going to be the glue that sticks all the activists together. And tonight you'll see a turn. We'll start talking about Donald Trump and who he is. And hopefully America will see him in a different light.
Okay, I think that's a very fair response to my question. And we'll watch that. We'll see how it happens. Certainly when Chris Christie spoke last night, we did not see any of that. And most people have commented on the fact that Hillary Clinton's name came up far more than Donald Trump's last night. Here's what Chris Christie said, among other things.
America and the world are measurably less safe and less respected because of the Iran deal that Hillary helped cut, period. Hillary Clinton, as an inept negotiator of the worst nuclear arms deal in American history, is she guilty or not guilty? As a flawed evaluator of dictators and failed strategist who has permitted Russia back in as a major player in the Middle East, is Hillary Clinton guilty or not guilty? Yeah. Hillary Clinton, as a coddler of the brutal Castro brothers and betrayer of the family of fallen state trooper Werner Foster and his family, is she guilty or not guilty? Yeah. And here at home, for risking America's secrets to keep her own and lying to cover it all up? Yeah.
Aaron, I had to go back and after hearing the speech and look up Warner Foster, who turns out was a New Jersey State trooper who was killed. The person who shot him was identified and fled to Cuba. So what Christie's references to is a sense that the State Department, with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State, and the Obama administration did nothing to try to get him back. At least that's what that line was all about.
Well, I'm glad you explained it. I wonder how many people in the arena.
I doubt that many did.
Yeah, we didn't. Chris Christie could have said, you know, Hillary Clinton responsible for the temperature in here was that she was guilty. I don't know. I don't know if that helped.
Well, actually, that's
reference flew right over everyone's head.
During the Christie speech last night, as you know, the crowd at one point started chanting "Lock her up." What was going through your mind when that happened, and what was happening in the Georgia delegation?
Well, there was some chants. I'd say about 50% of the people were chanting along "Lock her up," but you know, there's still the other half of us are thinking, you know, what is this going to solve and how is this going to be portrayed on TV? For those of us that have gone to these conventions, we want to be perceived as a party that can lead. We want to be perceived as a party that is trying to take this country in the right direction. So, you know, many of us, me included, you know, we kind of shied away from that sort of rhetoric.
Yeah, Chip, do you think that was just unfortunately a little a bridge too far? Loved it. The base loved it. But how does it play outside the hall?
I think... I don't know that Christie's remarks and Christie's speech.
I'm talking about the lock her up
chant. Oh, gotcha. I'm sorry. Yes. I mean, probably so. I mean, look, it's a convention. It's a political convention. You're gonna have a lot of red meat there. And Chris Christie got him going, right? I mean, he wanted to get him going. He wanted to be interactive with him, and it's no secret that he wanted to be Donald Trump's vice presidential pick. I don't think there was any serious consideration for him as VP because of the role he played in putting Ivanka's father-in-law in prison, Charles Kushner, for campaign finance violations back when he was U.S. attorney. But I think he kind of wanted to show, hey, this is what you could have gotten had you chosen me as your vice presidential candidate, because stylistically it's much different than Governor Pence from Indiana. But Chris Christie can still play that role out over the next 3 or 4 months and help the nominee.
So let me share with you just a few of the tweets that are coming in fast and furious. Hania Whitfield, does a Trump win translate to the Trump family providing his leadership decisions, particularly Don Jr. and Ivanka? Well, Aaron, we have been given a little bit of an insight about that in regard to the Melania Trump plagiarism charge. What we've learned since then is that Melania was a little bit worried about the amount of influence that the children were having on their dad, particularly in the decision to bring Mike Pence in as his running mate. So apparently they do have a lot of influence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if there was a Trump presidency, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see Donald Jr. with a senior advisory role. I mean, he probably couldn't be chief of staff because that requires so much insider knowledge of D.C. and its workings. But absolutely. I mean, he's already executive vice president of the Trump Organization.
And he was impressive. And conservatives really liked what he had to say yesterday because it looked authentic, which is the biggest criticism every time Donald Trump gives a speech, is authenticity. But his son clearly had it yesterday.
Very
and
much.
Delivered it.
Pax Bobro says, can't those of us old enough to recall the perils of nationalism, the road to war, educate those too young to connect the dots? Apparently a reference to feeling that there's a militaristic and militant kind of attitude coming out of the Republican convention.
Well, I mean, that clearly is going to be a problem for a lot of voters. I mean, there are people who want to live in peace with the rest of the world. And that doesn't mean that you roll over or you're weak. It just means you're looking for ways to use diplomacy, reason, relationships. So, I mean, that's a problem. That could be a problem in November. And the convention's just part of that. I mean, anything that is said during the convention is likely to reappear over the next few months in ways that can either help or hurt candidates.
This is a very basic question, but I think it's a good one for us to address, Chip. David Matheny asks, how are political conventions scheduled? Is it that the party in power is the last convention on the calendar? And that's exactly right. The party who holds the White House holds the last convention, right? Yeah,
everybody. I guess.
Yeah,
or has the ability to do that if they want.
Has the choice.
They don't have to do that.
I guess that's right. I guess they
have
the choice.
They get the last word.
And you know why that's interesting just for general knowledge? But, Aaron, it's interesting for another reason. there is not much time for the kind of traditional bounce we expect to see come out of a convention. There's usually a couple of weeks separating one party's convention from the other, and the party that goes first has an opportunity to build on its convention work. This time, bam, the Democrats come to Philadelphia as soon as the Republicans leave Cleveland.
It's been that way for a couple cycles now. I'm not sure if it was it 2008 when were the Democrats the first to put their convention right up against the...
I don't remember.
It used to be a week's break at least between the conventions, but that's changed in the last few cycles, and it's an idea that the party that goes second gets to immediately start countering what happened in the previous week and get their message out there and try and minimize that bump that you're talking about and get the last word before to voters.
And with that, I agree with that 100%. It's likely, at least from all the reports we've been seeing, that Hillary Clinton will make a decision or an announcement on Friday about her VP nominee. So as this Republican convention comes to a close and the nominee and the vice president go out on the campaign trail, they're definitely going to be competing with coverage with the Hillary Clinton VP announcement, which will immediately roll. So I think that's right.
Which I think is what happened in 2008 when after the Obama convention in Denver, immediately after John McCain introduced Sarah Palin as his pick and rolling into the convention in the Twin Cities, and that tried to take away some of those steam from the Democratic convention.
Let's talk. Go ahead, Ashley.
Well, I think that's why it's more of a bounce than a bump, because it's going to go up and it's going to come back down.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty of things that happen in this election cycle that will affect the polls, but you can't put much stock into the bump or the bounce because it's not lasting.
Ashley, let's talk just briefly, and I'll ask you first and then bring everybody else in. Mike Pence has his big moment tonight, gets to give a major speech. So does Ted Cruz. In passing that by, we should say the question is whether Ted Cruz will actually endorse Donald Trump or not. There are a lot of stories, Aaron, that he's not going to endorse him, but will maybe say nice things is what the Trump campaign is saying, right?
That's exactly right.
So, go ahead.
Well, that'll be helpful. You know, I can say that probably 40% of the delegates there are Ted Cruz either supporters or they have an affinity for Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and we should make the point that Ted Cruz was the main reason why Donald Trump, there were 700 votes cast in the roll call last night for candidates other than Donald Trump, most of them for Ted Cruz. I think that's the first time since around 1972 that's happened at a Republican convention, further proof of the kind of split, right?
Technically, I'm a Ted Cruz delegate myself, and many of us, the Ted Cruz delegates that are there, you know, Ted Cruz had a rally and an event for his delegates today. And for the people that went, it was all the same Ted Cruz paraphernalia from the presidential campaign. It felt like a Ted Cruz presidential campaign. And I think he's pivoting and kind of taking this one as, all right, this is the kickoff to my 2020.
Yeah, I mean, he's gearing up for maybe 2020 exactly. if he believes that Trump is going to lose. All right, but let's talk for a minute about Mike Pence. An interesting story. An evangelical Christian. His family's Catholic. And he became a born-again Christian in college, I believe, because he met a woman who is now his wife he actually had a fraternity brother who he saw wearing this beautiful cross, and he was attracted to it. And the story that he tells is that the fraternity brother said, you can't wear this around your neck until you wear it in your heart. And from that day on, he was an evangelical. And clearly, you're going to hear him refer to those evangelical sentiments tonight, don't you imagine, Ashley?
You know, Ralph Reed, yes, I do. Ralph Reed had a good point. He was speaking to some of us a couple of days ago, and he said, you know, 50% of the Republican base are evangelicals, and if the rapture happened, there would only be a handful of Republicans left because they're just so big a part of the Republican base. So that's huge. For half the delegates, they're going to consider themselves evangelicals, and his speech tonight is going to be able to soothe over their support for Donald Trump because many of them did not support him. So Governor Pence is probably our best bet to have a rock rib conservative who doesn't have a lot of baggage. You know, we love Newt in Georgia. Everybody would love to see Newt there, but it's just too much history there. Governor Pence is new. People are digging through his past right now, digging up old stories, but I'll tell you, he's still a breath of fresh air, relatively speaking.
All right. Ashley Bell, we appreciate your talking with us from Cleveland. We hope the rest of the convention goes well for you when you come back to Atlanta.
Thank you all so much, Adam.
Yeah, come on in and be on the show. We'll see you, Ashley. I'll tell you what, let's get our final break of the show out of the way. I'd love to talk a little bit about Democratic convention coming up, Mayor Franklin. Talk about about Hillary Clinton's VP possibilities and other matters in the final segment of Political Rewind. It's 2:40 Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back.
Are you thinking of getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV? GPB's vehicle donation program is here to help. Donating has never been easier. We'll take care of everything, including free pickup of your vehicle. Just go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR. That's 877-472-1227. And thanks so much.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Aaron Gould Shinen from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is with us before he heads off to Philadelphia. So is Chip Lake, not going to Philadelphia, Republican strategist, who is at the table again today, and Mayor Shirley Franklin, former Mayor Shirley Franklin. First of all, Mayor, are you going to run again? There's all this talk that you are going to run for mayor once again.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
What do you think of it?
I'm honored that people would consider it, and you know, you keep all your options open.
That's definitely not a no. That's certainly not a William Tecumseh Sherman moment, Mayor.
Well, you know, I've been around long enough to know.
Keep your options open.
Keep your options open.
All right. Well, we'll be interested in hearing how that unfolds.
Life has many twists and turns.
All right. Boy, Aaron, I don't know about you, but that really makes me curious, right?
I'm just kind of curious, like, which other potential candidate who's already in the race maybe is she just toying with?
Yeah.
Like, to keep them.
Aaron, I'm not toying with anybody, but we're not going to spend time on me.
Okay.
We have a big national.
That's right.
Qualifying for the mayor's race is next year, folks.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah,
which will be right around the corner before we know it.
Yeah,
it'll
before
be
you know
us.
It. Hey, a year ago we were saying when Donald Trump got in the race, boy, who knows who the candidate's going to be in July, but it sure won't be Trump.
No, I never said that.
No, you didn't.
I never said that.
I did say that, for the record. I was wrong.
Yeah,
well, I didn't say that. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had friends who said, are you serious? I said, just as others have said, can he win? If he can get the nomination, there's a possibility he can win.
All right. I do want to talk Democratic politics for a while. Hillary Clinton is not taking the week off, clearly. She's out campaigning. And I do want to hear just a little bit about the kind of messaging she's getting out there while Republicans are in Cleveland. So let's listen to an interview she did actually 2 days ago, but it's still relevant today.
No self-discipline, no self-control, no sense of history, no understanding of the limits of the kind of power that any president should impose upon himself. He has shown none of that. Let's return to torture. And you know what? I will order the American military to commit war crimes. What he has laid out is the most dangerous, reckless approach to being president than I think we've ever seen.
The most dangerous man ever to run for president of the United States.
I believe that.
Shirley Franklin, what do you think of that assessment?
Well, I actually agree with her. But, I mean, I'm very nervous about the kinds of statements that are made by Donald Trump. And there's some days where I don't know whether he believes what he's saying, which is even scarier to me.
You said earlier in the show, you were looking for a candidate who tells the truth, who's honest, trustworthy, and the American people don't feel that Hillary Clinton is honest and trustworthy. And as we've watched the saga of her email unfold, we have seen instances in which she appears to have been less than honest about that entire situation. Does that trouble you?
Well, it doesn't really matter what troubles me. It really matters what troubles
you. Well, sure it does.
Well, it has influence over what I do and how I do it. I believe that Hillary Clinton has the experience. I think in the case of the emails, even she has said she wished she had handled it differently. And whether she said that on the first day or the fifth day, you could argue with. I think she has the experience. I think she has the intelligence. And I think she has the background generally that is very unusual for a woman to have in American politics. And I think she'll be a great president.
Chip?
Republicans have waited 20 years for the Democratic Party to give Hillary Clinton her turn. And they finally do. and we have a nominee whose image rating is static and is upside down by 38 points. So to your point about the question about honest and trustworthy, it's a big problem for Hillary Clinton. That's bad news. The good news is it's certainly a problem for our candidate.
Yeah, well. I mean, Aaron, one of the reasons that we think, I think, and please weigh in on this, that we're seeing such a negative tone being struck in Cleveland, and it will be interesting to see whether the Democrats replicate it in Philadelphia, is it's what we've been talking about for months now. When you have two of the most when you have two of the least trusted candidates imaginable running for president, the only way to win is by making your opponent less likable and trustworthy than you. So you have to run a negative campaign. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to remember too that Hillary, she has such a record in the public eye. She's been around the national politics now for more than 20 years. She's got a record as Secretary of State. She's got a record as U.S. Senator. She was a very active and vocal First Lady for 8 years. There's no other candidate that I can think of offhand who had that kind of political background and political baggage to a large degree and then gets to the top spot. So, of course, the Republicans are going to key on her because they know so much about her. And frankly, they don't really I think they like her less than they like President Obama, although I have to admit I haven't seen any data in that regard. So, I mean, she's just such a big target for them. And it's going to be interesting to see how she pivots and the Democrats pivot into next week, you know, and if they do to Trump as much as Trump has been doing to Hillary this week.
Yeah, but I want to add to that. I mean, the question is whether there's no woman who's gotten this far.
True.
Okay, so some of this is defined by just the unusual and uniqueness. And I found when I was running that people were very skeptical about me as a candidate. I barely won. That's not what my bio says, but that's the truth. I mean, it says it was a landslide. What it means is there was no runoff, but, I mean, it was 50.01% of the vote. So it was very close election. But in addition to that, after I was in office for a year or two, people still came up to me and said, you know, and they considered it a compliment, I like what you're doing so far, as if I was going to jump off a bridge or turn, you know, my personality would turn. There was a skepticism about me and remains a skepticism about me as a political leader. And some of that has to do with my being a woman, just not accustomed to seeing women in executive positions. Mm-hmm. I was either feisty. I was never aggressive. I was either feisty. The newspaper published my age after my name for 5 years. Shirley Franklin, 63.
That wasn't me.
You know, but I mean, it's the truth. People don't even know how old men are who are running for office.
Yeah, but
so it's a difference. There's a skepticism because we haven't seen it as much. That is not to take anything away from whether Hillary Clinton is perfect or not. She's very, very good as a candidate, and she will be an excellent president.
You know, it's funny you said that. First of all, you and I have held up really well. Miss Franklin, because I was there the night that you were elected mayor of Atlanta covering your election, and I think we still look great.
And we feel pretty good, too.
We feel good, too. You know, I want to just go on a sidetrack for a sec. It's interesting you say that about how you were treated as a woman. I used to think about that when Jesse Jackson was running for president. I spent a lot of time covering Jesse. And he was also, it was always, he's so ambitious. And you know what? I didn't hear that word applied to white candidates for president. But with Jesse, ambitious became a negative. It's a similar kind of...
Well, and I'm not complaining about it. It's kind of part of the... It's just part of the normal things that are happening.
Yeah.
I certainly try not to wear it on my sleeve. But in reflection, there is a difference. I mean, for instance, people cared about what I wore when I was mayor. I've never heard anybody mm-hmm. talk about a male political candidate and what they're wearing. People commented on whether I wore the same suit twice.
You know, Aaron,
and how my haircut was.
I apologize. We Aaron, as long as we're going down this road, we've heard this a lot about Hillary Clinton. She's been, her manner of speaking has been described by some as shrill, including, by the way, I have described her manner of speaking at times in rallies as being, I don't think I've used the word shrill, but I've used other similar words. And it always comes back to us that we're being sexist in some ways when, in fact, her kind of hoarse delivery and attempt to reach out to the crowd really at times kind of hurts the message she's trying to get out, you know?
Yeah, I think she's much better in a smaller situation, smaller crowd when she's not having to yell into the microphone. Some people have the voice and some people don't. You have a voice for broadcasting. Chip does. I don't think I do. It's a personal. It's a personality trait. It's
all right, just, we have gone way off track because of me. And I've done that, so I take the blame.
Well, she is the Democratic nominee.
That's right.
So,
okay,
presumed nominee.
Okay, so we're going to hear from her, we think, in Florida Friday morning about her pick for VP. Who should she pick, Mayor?
Oh, I love Mayor, so I mean, who, so I'm a big fan of Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey and Governor Hickenlooper, who's a former mayor.
Denver, Colorado.
But having said that, I think there's several good candidates, and I think that her candidate will be a unifying force as well. And I would expect it to add some geographic diversity.
What do y'all think, Chip?
I think Cory Booker's a good name. It's a name I've heard quite a bit. Obviously, Tim Kaine, Tom Vilsack in Iowa. I'd be very surprised. I'd be shocked, in fact, if it's not one of those three names.
Yeah, the same. The only other name that is out there is Labor Secretary Thomas Perez. And we're all trying to read the tea leaves. She's going to be campaigning in Florida on Friday when we're expected that she's going to be there with her choice. And so you start asking yourself, okay, Tim Kaine is fluent in Spanish. Is he going to be there? Is it going to be highlighting Thomas Perez? You know, but that's all just such, you know, speculation at this point. But those are all the same names we're all hearing.
You know, before we went on the air, we talked, the name Elizabeth Warren came up as we were all just sitting here talking. And there seemed to be kind of agreement at the table that it's not likely she's going to pick Elizabeth
Warren.
She's
a very strong candidate, though. I mean, among men and women and people who consider themselves the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, don't let there be any mistake. There's a lot of support for Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren.
All right. Unfortunately, because we've been talking and I have been going off on a couple tangents, we're not going to be able to play Kevin Riley right now. We'll get him back on the phone tomorrow and have him on the show.
Just make sure that wasn't his employee, me, my fault.
You know, Kevin, Aaron wouldn't shut up. You got to watch out for him. But he talked about something, Aaron, on the phone call that I thought was really fascinating. At the Georgia delegation breakfast this morning, you had two young guys who have, are big in the evangelical media community come into the Georgia delegation and criticize Nathan Deal for vetoing the religious liberty bill. Nathan Deal was already back in Atlanta, so he wasn't there to be part of this. But I was struck by the fact that at a convention where you're trying to build unity, to have these two guys come in and criticize the governor of the state, the Republican governor of the state, strikes me as an odd way to try to build unity.
Well, I think you're right about that, but you got to remember this was a breakfast of just the Georgia delegation, and the Georgia delegation came out of the Georgia State Convention where there was a mild admonishment of the governor for that veto, and it obviously angered a lot of the base in the state of Georgia that he did so. I don't find that to be hugely I'm surprised that they would come, strangers sort of would come into our house, if you will, and criticize our, you know, leader, so to speak. It might have been impolitic, but it doesn't completely shock me.
Well, go ahead.
The silly season. I mean, this is at the same convention where the Trump campaign is picking a fight with the Ohio Republican Party leadership and also the governor, which is pretty substantial because Ohio is a pretty important state.
Well, yeah,
let's talk about that
for a minute. Number one, Paul Manafort, the chairman of the Trump campaign, on Monday morning, before the convention even starts, says John Kasich's an embarrassment because he chose not to be part of the convention. An odd way to talk about the governor of your host state and a guy who, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who, Ohio certainly loves John Kasich. But then, so even if you say, well, that's an off-the-cuff remark, that's Manafort, you know, he's like a Lee Atwater, he just talks, whatever. Then you look at the seating chart.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned it that. Sounds silly. Yeah. But seating charts at conventions matter.
Oh, no question about it.
That's why New York and California, of all states, are right up at the front. Ohio's in the back of the hall.
Yeah,
what is that about?
Yeah, no, you're exactly. And another thing that Paul Manafort did was not only did he call out the governor, but then he called out the senator that's currently running for re-election as being upset with the governor's decision and trying to bring Rob Portman into the situation. And Portman's doing the best to try to navigate what he can. And look, Rob Portman and John Kasich are all in very difficult spots. Kasich doesn't want to look disingenuous by going to the convention and pretending like he's excited about our nominee because he's not. So he's made a decision to stay away. He did get within, I think, a mile and a half of McHugh yesterday.
He was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That's right.
You know, at the same time, John Kasich also spoke this morning to the New Hampshire delegation breakfast. So, I mean, that's quite a message also.
And a story broke, I believe it was on Roll Call right before I came. So on Twitter, that they are reporting that Don Jr. reached out to Kasich's people immediately upon securing the requisite number of delegates and said, look, you come on and be our vice president. We'll make you the most powerful vice president.
All right, we have got about 2 minutes left. And, Mayor, we're so glad to have you here that I want to give you the last word. What do you hope? Oh, don't worry about it. I wish we had a camera shooting the expressions on there. What do you hope to have happen next week to see come out of your convention, the Democratic convention?
I expect to see a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of young people. I expect to see Senator Sanders supporters coming forward into unity, which they did around the platform a few weeks ago in Orlando. I think that Secretary Clinton will give a good message, a strong message for unity both of the party and of the country. And I would expect that it to be largely positive about what we can do for our children and grandchildren in years to come, and not be focused entirely on what might have gone wrong at the Republican convention. I don't think that means that we will ignore the fact that Donald Trump is the nominee and that some of his positions are diametrically opposed to what we as Democrats believe in and have passed in our platform. But I'm looking forward to it. I'm not a delegate. I am going as the co-chair of the platform committee that ended up with a unity platform endorsed by Sanders and Clinton campaigns without any amendments or
no minority report.
No minority reports. It was hard work for a woman of my age. 15-hour days, which is pretty hard
it'll
work.
It'll get you in shape for the campaign next
that's
year.
Right, so. That's right.
Exactly.
Mayor Franklin.
Thank you.
Mayor Shirley Franklin, it was a real pleasure to have you here. Aaron?
I just got to say, NBC is now reporting that a possible Hillary vice presidential pick is Charlie Crist, who's from where? Florida.
Wow. Wow, and she's going to be in Florida
I can't believe
next
that,
week.
But that's
well, we'll
NBC
see how that. Thank you for that late-breaking report, Aaron. We appreciate your being here from the AJC. And Chip Lake. Thank you for being here today. One last tweet while we're going out. Patty Shellhas tweets and says, I've watched 2 days of RNC on C-SPAN. No evidence of racism or sexism. In fact, it feels inclusive and real. So thank you for that tweet. PoliticsGPB is our Twitter handle. You can keep the conversation going by tweeting us even when we're not on the air. So thank you all for being here today. We have a full complement of producers and interns in the control room, and we thank all of you for your great work today. I do not have the time to say each of your names individually. We're back Friday at 3 o'clock, and at that time, we're going to have Eric Tannenblatt, Republican, who was a big Jeb Bush supporter, and he's been in Cleveland this week, not as a delegate, as an observer. Billy Linville. You've all heard Billy Linville before. He's a Democratic strategist who always has something pertinent and interesting to say. So we'll see you again Friday at 3. I'm Bill Nigut. Thanks so much for being with us.